Hey, everybody. This week, Paul and I are going to discuss a current, you could call it a sports figure in the news right now, who's got a pretty high profile lawsuit against an insurance company and what that's all about. What do we cover here, Paul?
Yeah, well, we talked about how we're not surprised that this happened in a certain sector of the life insurance industry.
Not surprised at all.
Not surprised at all. If you're a NASCAR fan or even know anything remotely about NASCAR, you'll recognize the name of this person. He's a star.
Yep. Hey, and then in the show notes, go ahead and register for our next webinar, which is going to be on November 22nd at 10 a.m. Eastern time. So we will we'll put out a little notice on that, what we're going to be discussing prior to that. But hit that registration link and we'd love to see you guys there. All right, everybody. Enjoy.
Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Paul.
And we're going to challenge you to transform your financial future through the principles of the most profitable business in the world, banking.
We believe everyone should be involved in two businesses, the business that you're in and the banking business. Everyday people can replicate what bankers have been doing for centuries to leverage capital and build wealth through private lending.
Join us as we uncover the truths about money, expose lies and myths, and flip conventional financial advice on its head. Here we go.
All right, Paul, you're still in the rental, man. When are you leaving?
Well, right after this, I'm going to drive to my house.
So really?
We took possession of the house this morning and took delivery of furniture this morning, and we're going to sleep there tonight, albeit on some cheap Walmart mattresses that I had to buy because of the government shutdown and I can't get my temporary storage household goods delivered to me. So
I hear Walmart is completely stocked full because of the shutdown. At least I saw a video of that, so it must be true.
Yeah, well, I was able to get four mattresses, same type. They're like an 8-inch foam. They're actually probably better than the mattress I had as a child, like my entire adolescence. Like,
yeah.
And they were $95 a piece. They're twins, $95 each.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure my dad probably shopped at like a prison thrift shop, like used mattresses. And that's what I slept on as a kid. I'm pretty sure.
I remember in Afghanistan, I flew to this, the National Police Training Center in Wardak province. And which was actually at pretty high altitude, it was like 9,000 feet or whatever, fly in there and then get in these little temporary billets. You know, they're just plywood shacks, right?
Everyone knows.
B-Hut. B-Hut. And the mattress, pretty sure, like had protruding springs like sticking out of it in all different directions. So I just put down my mat and was like, well, this is what I got.
It's therapeutic. It's like an acupuncture mattress.
Yeah. I mean, it just was really great.
With springs all night long.
Slept wonderfully. Probably due to the lack of oxygen, but
yeah, probably. Well, all right, man. So good. So maybe next time we record, you'll be from your new place.
Yeah, I'll have my desk in there, which is right here. I'll have a table from Costco that's going to serve as my thing for my backsplash. I guess not a backsplash, but like a supposed to have like a nice piece of furniture back there, but that's in storage. Okay. So the next recording when we record next week, I'll be in the office. So it'll be a completely different background. It won't be blurred.
Nice.
So it'll look far better. It'll be a lot more comfortable.
You already got Wi-Fi scheduled?
Yeah, it's been in there for a few weeks now.
Okay.
I've got a hard line. It'll go right to the computer. So I'll have really good speed just like I have here.
Nice.
So, and the only thing I don't have is a chair. I need to get one. I'll take a kitchen table chair and just put it in there for now.
Yeah. I wish I had a standing desk. They just don't look nice because I like to stand a little bit.
I'm going to send you something that you can add to that current desk.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's decorative. It's not like the one you buy on Amazon.
By the way, the interior designer.
It looks good.
It works. Okay. All right. Cool. Well, hey, let's, a current event we can talk about today. And we've been wanting to do another episode on universal life insurance since episode 29, like over 3 years ago we did. So if you want more, you know, deeper onto IUL, universal life insurance, and why we don't use it, go to episode 29. But we can bring up something that recently came up that neither of us are surprised about whatsoever.
This is my surprised face.
Yeah, mine too. So surprised. So if anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, NASCAR racer Kyle Busch is in a pretty high profile lawsuit right now against Pacific Life, claiming that he lost $8.5 million that he put into a index universal life policy with a bunch of promises and quote unquote guarantees that were made. But he paid over $10 million in premium and lost 8.5 of that, which to me is unreal that that's even, I could give $10 million to my 8-year-old daughter and she wouldn't be able to lose $8.5 million.
Right.
Like, it's unreal. So you want to give like a, I don't know, we got an article up and we'll post this in the show notes, but any other insight into that that we want to go over before we kind of drill down on why we don't use IUL?
Well, yeah, just one thing. If you don't know who Kyle Busch is, he's a high profile guy. You know, he's a star in NASCAR. So he's very well known, has done very well. So my thoughts when I first heard about this, when somebody posted it in our little chat group was, well, if this can happen to somebody like Kyle Busch, who most likely has, you know, has attorneys, tax attorneys,
right,
advisors of all types, you know, probably friends that he's met over the years that are, you know, well informed financially, although
and very wealthy.
Although yeah, you meet people and even some very wealthy people don't know anything about estate planning or whole life insurance or anything in the insurance space. It's kind of ignored. Like, oh
yeah.
So I'm, you know, we'll see what happens, but kudos to him for bringing this up and bringing this to light. You and I have talked about IUL or universal life in general on this show several times over the last 3.5 years. And we've looked at people's illustrations that have been brought to us and policies that are, you know, fairly young, and they just, or some that are even maybe a little bit more mature, 13, 14, 15 years old. And they just don't, you know, some of them or most of them just don't look good for whatever reason.
No, they really don't. And I guess, you know, in the lawsuit, it said he was sold this policy as a, quote, tax-free retirement plan.
Right.
You know, he was supposed to funded like like 5 years of $1 million premiums.
Correct. And then he was supposed to be able to take out 800,000. This is all in the article, folks, but supposed to be able to take out starting at age, whatever, 50 something. He's 40 right now. $800,000 a year of withdrawals. The article says withdrawals. I don't know if that's what it would be, but I'm guessing that he's using this for less for life insurance and more for income, you know, tax-free income stream. Mm-hmm. But of course, you know, there's no way that's going to be true.
Right. So he's promised all these things, and I'm sure, like, maybe I'm guessing here, but I can only assume what the agent did that designed these and sold to him. They just put a bunch of paperwork in front of his face, a bunch of illustrations, and said, here's, if you put in this much, you're going to get $800,000 tax-free for the rest of your life starting at age 50.
Sounds great. So where can I sign?
Wow. Why does nobody else know about this? This is amazing. So, and you and I have seen a lot of IUL policies because we've done a lot of exchanges of getting clients out of these IULs that some of them did just fine for the time that they owned it, but they see what's on the horizon. They see, man, when I hit those retirement years, this thing is going to start cannibalizing itself. Cause the whole way it's structured. The chassis is a one term or a annual renewable term life insurance policy.
Yep.
So that's annual correct. Renewable means every single year it renews for one more year. And guess what happens every single year? You become 1 year older. So is life insurance going to get more expensive or less expensive as you get older? Obviously it gets more expensive every single year. Then you get in your 60s and 70s, close to that mortality age, and it's unreasonably expensive. But how do they cover that? You don't have to pay out of pocket. You just let your cash value pay your premium for you.
That's another thing I want to talk about in this article. They use the term, and it could be just cash value means something different, Dave, doesn't
it? It does.
To a universal life product, any of them, variable, regular, universal, or index universal, than it does to a whole life guy like us and our clients. Cash value is the equity of the policy in a whole life policy. Mm-hmm. You could make the argument, and maybe we're just getting into, you know, this is a language issue maybe more than anything, but it's really an understanding that people don't have that buy this product, is that your cash value is not related to the future death benefit in an IUL policy. Meaning you could say like in a whole life policy, the cash value represents, you know, the present value of the future death benefit, the delta being future premiums and growth, right? It's not the case in an IU or any universal life product, right? Because that is the premiums that you're paid are going to be put against an index, and that's going to have an account value, kind of like you buy a mutual fund or a stock. It's going to have some sort of value tied to it.
Right.
And the problem is, well, the market doesn't go up forever. some of these agents are illustrating, you know, 8% or 10%, whatever they're illustrating. There was a regulation that was put in place a few years ago that's supposed to cap what they can actually illustrate. But they're illustrating this uninterrupted compound growth in these policies over a number, forever, until the person graduates. And that's just not going to be the case.
Right.
There's, you're never going, it's, the market has never done that. It will never do that. And therefore, the policy illustration is out of date the minute it is printed.
Right. And that goes for whole life insurance as well.
Sure.
Of course. But whole life insurance doesn't have increasing premiums every single year until the day you die. Whole life insurance has actual guarantees that guarantee there's going to be a death benefit there the day you die. So what does Nelson say? Go ahead and just, well, actually, first, before you get to that, I just want to say up front, first and foremost, all life insurance is not created equal. So what my fear is people are going to see this headline on, you know, all over social media, Kyle Busch got robbed of $8.5 million in universal life insurance. And all they're going to see is life insurance.
Right.
And they confuse that with whole life. Oh, universal whole. I mean, how many people have you talked to and you say, do you have any insurance? They're like, yeah, I do. What type? Well, it's either a whole life or universal life, or maybe it's term. They have no idea. It's all insurance to most people, right? So they're not the same. They couldn't be more different, actually, between whole life and index universal life.
Very different. Yeah. Very different. Okay. So Nelson Nash on page 39 in Becoming Your Own Banker, the fifth edition, this one that looks like this, the vault on the front of it. He says this. My thoughts on universal life and variable life. Universal life was invented in the early 1980s by E.F. Hutton, a stock brokerage firm that, in my opinion, knew nothing about life insurance. Remember the television commercial, when E.F. Hutton speaks, everyone listens. I actually met somebody that knew that. He was like 50, the guy I served with in the Army. He knew exactly who E.F. Hutton was. Anyway, they don't, have you heard of them? Have you heard him saying anything lately? They don't exist anymore. Universal life was nothing more than one-year term insurance with a side fund of an interest-bearing account. It was an attempt to unbundle the savings element and the life insurance element of a whole life policy, something that can't be done if one understands the concept of whole life insurance.
Yeah. So, I mean, Nelson goes on in building your warehouse of wealth. There's the top 10 reasons not to buy indexed universal life on page 75. In the case for IBC, another one that we promote and tell people you should read, page 93, they answer the question, why shouldn't you use universal life for the purposes of infinite banking? It is, if you've read a book on infinite banking, you'll know right away that indexed universal life is not the appropriate product to use for the process of banking. I just wish Kyle was a podcast listener, you know, before he got mixed up in this IUL. We could have saved him a whole lot of money. You know, it's funny. There's, you and I have heard horror stories from people who've owned IUL. Some people have found us like a year after they started a policy.
Sure.
And there's typically that 10-year surrender window where you get penalized big time if you surrender your policy in the first 10 years.
Right.
You know, like we've got a shared client and he's like, I'm just going to chalk it up. I made a mistake. I'm going to take my losses and move on instead of trying to ride this thing out for 10 years. I'm going to move it to something better. Got other people who've had policies for 20 years and they did just fine, but they see what's on the horizon. Like I mentioned, and they say, that's not for me. This thing is not going to be there when I need it. And we move it into a whole life policy. I've yet to ever hear a horror story from somebody who had a whole life policy for 20 plus years and has a horror story because they don't have it.
No.
If you've owned a policy for that long, you've got more cash value than you ever paid in premium. And it's going to continue to, like, your cash value and your death benefit will be there until the day you die.
Yeah. And I think the universal life product just violates what insurance is supposed to do. Insurance is supposed to take risk from you, not add to your risk profile. Right? It's risk transfer. You're supposed to transfer risk from yourself to the life insurance company. With universal life, unfortunately, you retain the client, right? The owner of the policy retains most of the risk. And I don't want to speak bad about some companies, but they know what's going on.
100%.
They know what's going on. They did the math behind, they did the actuarial math behind the policy that you're buying, whether it's whole life, universal, whatever, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. They know what's going to happen to that policy when you're 80, if you live that long, to your 90 and you live that long. They know.
They reserve the right. I guess it's not going to be around the agent that sold it to you.
Right. They'll be, in fact, the last universal life policy person I spoke to, we did kind of a 1035, his agent had died.
Yeah.
Died and that
or
premium,
out of the business, yep. Whatever.
That premium on that policy too had already doubled. The cost of, I think the line item was cost of insurance, went from $425 to over, just under 900.
And how old was
he? I pointed that out to him. He was 50, how old was he? 56-ish, I think, if I remember correctly. Not super old.
Yeah.
But I said, look, you bought this when you were 48 or whatever it was. And now that cost of insurance line has more than doubled.
Because those internal costs aren't guaranteed. They can change the contract on you. That's another thing about whole life and IUL is with whole life, it's a unilateral contract. The insurance company cannot change that contract. The only person that can make changes to it is you, the owner.
That's right. Your premiums are fixed. You know, eventually to comply with MIC rules, they're going to kind of decrease over time in your whole life product with the index universal life. Not only is there no non-forfeiture options, which we've covered before, right? But you're going to pay premium one way or another. You're going to strip it away from the cash, the side account to pay the premium. You're going to maybe do a loan and pay it, or a combination of a withdrawal and a loan, or you're going to pay the premium and also pay the increasing premium as it goes up because you're trying to maintain maybe a certain death benefit. Like, hey, I want to have $1 million when I'm 90. Well, that cost of $1 million 1 year renewing term on a 50-year-old is way different than it is when you're 60, 70, 80, or 90 years old. So bottom line, inappropriate product for IBC. Nelson said it in every book.
Inappropriate product for life insurance as well.
Yeah, we've said it too. Like, I don't know how it can be, how can it be sold or as permanent life insurance?
It's kind of like, that's a misleading term. So misleading.
It should be sold as, this is 1 year renewing term with a side account, you know, savings or investment component or something. Yeah.
That you're never allowed to not pay the premium on, and the premium will get higher on you every single year.
It wouldn't
Do you want this? Do you want this product? How's that sound?
It wouldn't sell it. It sounds terrible.
It's the dumbest thing in the world. Like, we listened to an interview with David McKnight, who wrote the book, The Power of Zero.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great book. He talked about the life insurance retirement plan. He calls it a LRP. He doesn't talk like tax-free retirement income so much. He calls it a life insurance retirement plan. And so I get contacted by people sometimes. They're like, I would like a LRP. Do you do LRPs? I'm like, okay, I know you heard about that in The Power of Zero.
Yep.
David McKnight, he kind of coined that phrase. And it's no different than what we show with whole life insurance. Like, when you retire, yeah, you can pull off some income. Your dividends will be, you know, if they pay out, they'll be nice and big. You'll have access to the tax-free access to the growth of the policy. Yep. So there's a lot of that. And it's a great volatility buffer in retirement. But David McKnight even said in an interview, when he was pressed far enough, he admitted this product is not designed for life insurance.
It's not.
It's not designed to have life insurance when you're 85 years old.
It's not. And I got a guy on YouTube that I was arguing with a couple of years ago to admit that. I was like, well, what if I want to leave? I think I asked him, what if I want to leave a large tax-free, you know, income tax-free legacy to the next generation? He's like, well, it's not designed for that. And I was like,
why is it called life insurance? Yeah. And, you know, and David, I recommend that book to people, The Power of Zero, read it, but replace IUL with whole life.
Right. The vehicle should be whole life.
Just take IUL out of the picture altogether because it's not designed for life insurance. There's no guarantees it will be there when you need it.
Right. And in that same interview, I think he was pressed on, well, how much more internal rate of return am I actually going to get on this product? And he was like, maybe 1% is, I think, what
over
I remember hearing.
Yeah, right. Over a well-designed whole life insurance policy, maybe 1%. You're going to take maybe 1%. All that extra risk for 1% gain? Are you serious? Yeah.
I'll make up the 1% somewhere else outside the policy, doing some sort of investment or something.
Right, because we don't care about the rate of return of our policy. We're getting multiple rates of return outside of our policy by leveraging the banking function in our own lives.
Exactly right. Also, you know, talking to the internal rate of return of a dividend paying whole life policy is, all you need to know, folks, is it's going to outperform a comparative savings account at your bank over its lifetime.
Sure. Big time. So, I mean, I'm having this talk with my son, Jack. He's 18. He's got a good amount of cash saved up and he wants to upgrade his car to a truck, which it is an upgrade going from a car to a truck.
But he's got an Audi. He's going to go buy an American piece of crap.
It's still an upgrade. Going to a truck. That's a man's vehicle. So, you know, he's kind of growing into himself. And
why doesn't he rent the Audi on Turo, make some cash, and then use that cash to pay?
That's not a bad idea. We haven't even thought about that.
Because it's a luxury vehicle, entry-level luxury vehicle.
Yeah.
So business opportunity. Maybe.
There you go. But so this was a really good opportunity, though, for he and I to have this discussion about, you know, there's two ways to finance a car that we've been taught. You know, we all talk about this all the time. You could either borrow
money
or you pay cash and you give up the interest you could have earned. And he started understanding that. And I said, well, let's create a policy for you. You can dump all that in right now and keep you a very manageable premium going forward. And you'll never lose the opportunity of that cash building on itself every year until the day you die, man, for like the next 60 to 70 years.
Right.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And he's on board. So he's going to write his own application, fill it out, and we'll get a policy in place on him that he can own.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Imagine starting a dividend paying whole life insurance policy when you're that age.
When you're 18. I said, you'll be so far ahead of your peers, or as your friend once said, you won't even have a peer.
You won't have any peers.
Yeah.
You know, that reminds me of kind of off topic of today's episode, but getting back to that peers discussion is that you look at this, our children's generation, they are going to struggle so much to be a homeowner.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I mean, the acute inflation that has occurred just in the last 5-6 years since the plandemic there. Unbelievable, you know.
You know, I don't know. It could be a good thing for our culture, because back in the day, families used to live together, right? Before the Industrial Revolution, families lived together.
That is true.
Like your entire lives, which other cultures
and some cultures are still doing that.
Yeah, like India, but capitalism has actually kind of wrecked that in India. Capitalism showed up and now everybody is making enough money to live on their own, and it kind of destroys that family nucleus. So it could be a good opportunity if it's done correctly. Not like, yeah, son, you can come live at home and just be a bum on the couch for the next 15 years and do and give nothing to this family.
Right.
But if you bring them in and say, hey, now you're an adult in this family, adults produce, adults contribute, adults have responsibilities in this family, and you're going to be treated just like one of us. That could work. And that could be a really good thing for our society, our culture. Rent's due on the first, buddy. Yeah. I mean, that's why my dream now is, you know, not like a private jet or a Ferrari and all that fun stuff. It's like 100 acres and a family compound where all the kids can come back and build their own house on our family property and a legacy property that can be handed down to the next generation. Like, how cool would that be?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I would like it even more if it was not in Minnesota.
It won't be in Minnesota. I guarantee you that. Guarantee you that. Yeah. Well, so back to the IUL. Man, I hope everybody listening, I mean, there are some people listening who are still trying to figure it out.
Sure.
Like, should I go whole life insurance? I get phone calls and people are like, you know, my friend told me about this, or my advisor told me he recommended IUL. What do you think about that? It's a really quick discussion.
Yeah.
Like, do you want more risk? Do you want fewer guarantees? All for maybe earning 1% more in your total growth? Do you think that's worth it? Like, you answer. I'll ask questions and you tell me.
I think if you're a budding agent or a young agent, you know, a lot of the guys in the IBC space, including, you know, obviously Nelson talked about it, but there's a lot of good information out there on how you can kind of just easily ask those simple questions. Like, do you want a product that gets more expensive? you carry more risk and the premiums aren't guaranteed, nor is the death benefit. So you end up paying a lifetime of premium and have nothing to show for it. Because here's a bunch of open source examples from the news from New York State or California or Arkansas, you know, wherever it occurred, where people paid premiums for 20, 30 years and ended up with zero death benefit because the policy cannibalized itself.
Yeah.
You're not going to want that product.
You're not. And, or do you want it because you can get a higher rate of return? Well, if you're all about rate of return, why are you using a life insurance product for that? There's investment products that are geared towards a higher rate of return.
Yep. And we've said on this podcast, if you want that, but you still need life insurance, buy term and invest the difference.
Invest the difference. Yeah. Go Dave Ramsey.
Go Dave Ramsey, you know, and go do that.
Maybe it'll work out for you. Great. I hope it does. But here's the thing. I think what people get sold on is, oh, you can get tax-free cash back out. Okay, great. But here's another way to get tax-free cash. Build your assets in something else and borrow against them. That will always be tax-free. Even if it's just a bunch of stock, you got a bunch of Apple stock, stack that, don't sell it, just borrow against it, and that's tax-free income. Like, that would be a much better play than putting money into something that's just all blended in together. They throw life insurance and investments in a blender and hit go. And like, what's the point of that?
Right. There's nothing that a life insurance policy can do, especially annually renewing term, that's going to enhance an investment portfolio for you. There's no not way. Some magic sauce like, oh, it's going to do better than the S&P 500 somehow. No, it's not.
Right. Yeah. Almost no public companies beat the S&P 500.
No.
And
no,
something like
that's right.
What, the top seven countries, the Mag 7, create 96% of the returns in the stock market. They're
all of the S&P,
yeah,
pretty much.
So, I mean, you got so many different options out there. Go do something
if you
else
want to buy the most expensive term ever, universal life is your, go get it.
Go get it.
The most expensive term you can find. That's what it is.
So we give people a hard time, but the fact is you got to educate yourself. Don't go to the first insurance salesman or financial advisor you meet and let them talk you into doing something. You gotta, and that's why you and I have never talked anybody into doing anything with whole life insurance. If you haven't read a book, we're gonna say go read a book, because the number one first step in this is education. Guarantee you, Kyle Busch's insurance agent, well, I can't guarantee anything, okay? So I'm not gonna speak for him, but I would imagine I'd put all of my cash value on the line in this bet that he never said, hey, you should really go educate yourself on IUL. Here's a book.
No way.
Here's some podcasts. Here's some resources to check out. Make sure you really know what you're getting into, and then come back and we'll work together.
Yeah.
No way he did that.
And I think that's par for the course in this section of the industry, not your whole life guys, right? But in that, I hate to say it, like, we're not the same.
We're not the same.
Dave and I know a lot about life insurance, a lot about finance, a lot about just money things in general.
And the banking
process. Universal life, if you, Dave knows a lot about lawnmower maintenance, right?
I do now.
What an amazing engine.
It is. It's a Toro. It's a good one.
Yeah. I mean, it ran with literally no oil.
No oil. Bone dry. Why do they even say add oil? What's the point? It runs without it.
Yeah. I did hear it a little bit. I was like, man.
Yeah, you got a good ear for those things.
I do. Anyway.
You barely heard it over your tinnitus, the ringing in your ears.
I can't remember what the hell I was going to say.
I don't know. Sorry. We're not the same is what you were
saying. Yeah, we're not. Yeah, I can't remember what the heck I was going to say. But we know a lot about this product and all of these products. We don't personally own. Nor have we ever personally sold universal life.
Never.
And there's got to be a good reason for it. There has to be, right? And
it's not to say that anybody who sells universal life is a bad person. I just think they're misguided. Some of them are bad people, but some people who sell whole life insurance could be bad people.
Absolutely.
Especially if they're churning. I mean, all these other agents at this one, you know, big company that likes to steal clients and say, you should roll that whole life policy into a new whole life policy. Like, dumbest thing I ever heard. But so there are some, and they're taught to do that. So,
for sure.
But there are good, I know good people who who go towards IUL. They can't give you a very good reason why. They really can't on why it's better than whole life, other than you can get a higher rate of return. Okay. But
compared to what?
What kind of risk?
Compared to where?
That
how much risk? The risk question always should be on our minds, folks.
Yeah.
You know, I want with insurance. Like, I want to know if I crash my car, or something crashes into me, that USAA in this case is going to pay out that collision payment to me so I can get the car fixed or replaced.
Hey, why hasn't IUL kind of gone over to IAL, indexed auto, or indexed auto insurance, IAI? Why not? Like, what if you tried to sell somebody auto insurance and be like, look, you can actually get a rate of return, but I mean, you know, if you crash your car, depending on when that happens, you may not be covered. What do you think about this? We'll mix auto insurance and investing. How's that work? How's that any different than mixing life insurance with investing?
It makes no sense.
You're mixing something that's the most important thing you have, which is life insurance. The only thing that's guaranteed to pay out someday because you're guaranteed to die. Why would you mix that with investing? Why not mix your home insurance with investing? Let's create a product like that and sell it to the masses.
You know, it's kind of like putting an elevator in an outhouse. Don't belong. And if you don't know what, I'm going to ask, do you know what movie that's from?
No.
That's a direct quote. Anyway, chime in the comments, folks, if you know which movie, I'll reveal it if I remember to next, or if you text me or something, I'll answer it. But
sounds like a Rodney Dangerfield movie.
It's the best movie in 1989 with Patrick Swayze.
Oh, that's not Point Break, is it? That's older than 89.
The other one.
what, Roadhouse or Footloose? Roadhouse.
Probably, huh? Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't in Footloose. That was Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, whatever. I've never seen that one either.
In Chris Penn, I think, or Sean Penn. Was it Sean?
Yeah.
One of the Penn brothers, the dead one. Chris Penn, I think.
Was not it. Sean. Anyway. Sean's alive. Yeah. All right, man. Well, cool. I think that about wraps it up. So again, go listen to episode 29 if you want a little more in-depth discussion on the specifics of IUL and why it's not suitable for infinite banking or for life insurance, for that matter, I might boldly say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it were, we'd own it.
Right. But it ain't, and we don't.
Yeah.
So there you go.
There's no chance. There's not a chance.
Yeah.
I'd ever own it or sell. No. I think it's unethical for me. It would be unethical for me to sell that product, actually.
Based on what you know, it's absolutely unethical for you to sell it. Yeah. So, all right. Good point. Well, hey, everybody, hope you enjoyed. Look forward to seeing you back here next week. And man, we're approaching 200 episodes. So we'll have to think of something pretty cool to do for number 200.
I'll take the, I'll record it from my hot tub or something.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's what everybody wants to see. We'll make sure not to release the YouTube video on that one.
I'll just keep it from like, then it'll be like this, like nipple line up.
Okay. It'll still look like you're wearing a shirt. Well, me too, for that matter.
Yeah.
So, all right. Hey, everybody, we'll see you next week. Until then, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.
Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. If you'd like to have a conversation with us to see how you can become your own banker, or if you have any questions or topics you'd like us to tackle on a future episode, please send us an email to davidandpaul@theibcguys.com.
And subscribe and leave us a review if you're on Apple. Follow and leave us a 5-star review if you're on Spotify. And please share this with your friends. We'll see you next week.